Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zoom, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by MyMumble.com, one of the leading voice chat service providers with locations all over the world. MyMumble offers free 5-seat voice chat service for life, as well as higher capacity plans for any group that requires a secure environment for confidential communication. Listeners of The Organic View can receive 15% off on monthly recurring power servers by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. For more promotional offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. On today's show, Tom and I are going to welcome Iowa commercial beekeeper and bee advocate Ivan Rickers, and he's going to talk about water quality. But first, I'd like to welcome to the show my special guest co-host, Mr. Tom Theobald. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, June. And Ivan, hello. We've had a similar span of beekeeping, but our paths have never crossed, so it's nice to finally meet.
Okay.
And good afternoon, Mr. Rickers. It is so nice to have you on the show. It's so nice to connect with somebody from your neck of the woods, so to speak.
Yeah. What would you like to know?
Well, Mr. Rickers, if you wouldn't mind, could you just take a few minutes to share a little bit about your tenure as a commercial beekeeper and also some of the positions that you've held within the beekeeping community?
Well, I've been keeping bees ever since I was about 14 years old, and I've been at it quite a long time. We've run ever all the way from 900 to, well, we're down to about when the neonicotinoids came on the market. That's when beekeeping really sort of went to hell. As far as the positions I've held, I've been president and vice president of the Iowa Honey Producers. I've been on the board. Other than that, I guess, what more can I tell you? I've been at it a long time. Don't know enough not to do anything else.
I first came across your name in an article that was in, I do believe, the Des Moines Register, that was titled "Utilities Can't Remove All Pesticides." And this article basically focused on your concerns about neonicotinoids in the water. So could you share your thoughts with our listeners who don't quite understand the concerns that you have?
The neonicotinoids are highly soluble in water, and they don't readily dissipate. They stay around for years and years. And even though if the farmers would quit using it now, it'd take a few years to get rid of them. They mess up the bees. They mess up the bees' immunity systems. So, and the stuff gets in the water. We're drinking the stuff. It's bad news, period.
Ivan, I have a beekeeping question, if you will. Yeah. I read in some of the information on your operation that you were a two-queen beekeeper, and I was one of two double-queen beekeepers here in Colorado. My friend Paul Hendricks passed away last January, so I'm now the only two-queen beekeeper in Colorado. And what my question is, I'm interested to know what you would expect as an average surplus from your colonies before all these problems began. What would your honey harvest be?
A few years ago, before the neonicotinoids got on the market, we were getting a lot of 200-pound averages in some places. And as far as running two queen colonies, you really needed help to run two queen colonies because you really piled them high. You needed help taking the honey off. It was, we didn't run that many two queeners because you just had to have help to do it.
I always felt that I was successful if I could just crack that top super, reach high enough to crack that top super and didn't need a stepladder, and I'm 6'2".
Yeah.
Yes, but I understand what you're saying about the work.
When the boxes get full, that's heavy work.
What would your production be now, Ivan?
Oh, we had probably 30 or 40 pounds this last year. It's the worst year we ever had. Of course, we were dealing with the drought too. But ever since these Poncho and Gaucho came on the market, they're using on the soybeans and the corn. Things just went to hell.
For listeners who may not know, Poncho and Gaucho are imidacloprid and clothianidin, correct?
Right.
Yes.
Mr. Rickers, I have a question for you. About a year ago, I conducted a live discussion between two very well-known and well-respected beekeepers. The first one was California commercial beekeeper Randy Oliver, and the second was European commercial beekeeper Walter Hoffiger. Now, there was a comment made about the conditions in Iowa, and we would like to know what your observations are as a commercial beekeeper. If you don't mind, I'd like to play that clip for you. And as I said, I'm just curious what your observations are. All right, bear with me.
Okay. But again, we get down to the bottom line is if you go to the most intense area of neonicotinoid use in the entire United States, that is the Corn Belt of the United States, where it's in the state of Iowa, 2 out of every 3 square feet of land are planted in either corn or soybeans. Most of those are seed treated with neonicotinoids. And the beekeepers are thriving there. They tell me there's no problem. It's the best it's been.
The problem that Randy Oliver has is he has a lot of friends in the chemical seed companies, and he's a little bit influenced by all that. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He admits himself he has no experience with the neonicotinoids because they're not much used in his area at all. The guy is full of wind. He writes all these articles for the bee journals, but when it comes right down to it, at the end of the articles, he said, well, the neonicotinoids aren't that bad. But then he puts his, in there and says, but then they might be. The guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
I questioned that when I heard it, Ivan. And so I went to the National Agricultural Statistics Service statistics report of colony counts, and they do it by state and have for many years. And I looked at Iowa just to see what the figures said. And what I found was that the colony count in Iowa went down by about 66% in the first 10 or 12 years after the genetically modified crops were introduced, and along with the genetically modified crops come the systemic pesticides. Now, Iowa's unique because Iowa was never a major commercial beekeeper state. This isn't a situation where the bees simply moved to South Dakota or Montana. They just disappeared. So the statistics would tell us that there was a dramatic decline in the colony count. I wonder if that's been your observation as well, Ivan.
Oh, yeah. It took out all the sideliners, the serious sideliners. They just gave up. It messed them up big time. And, if you're losing a bunch every year, it costs like heck anymore. Every year it costs more to replace those very bees. So keeping the colony count up is tough.
Do you have any commercial beekeepers in Iowa anymore?
We've got a few. They go, what keeps them in business is they go to California for the almond orchards.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few big ones, but that's what they do. They're getting their, that's what's keeping them alive, is the almond orchards.
Right.
Now, last year, there were a tremendous number of losses because of tank mixing and whatnot. Do you know if there were any losses that were sustained by some of the commercial beekeepers that you know from Iowa?
No, I don't know. I haven't heard.
Have you heard anything about this year's pollination?
About the losses from the spraying, you mean? From California? Or
yes.
Where you,
yes.
Well, only what I read in the bee journals is, they said they lost something like 80,000 colonies of bees from that. Really, pretty stupid on the part of the almond growers to do that. And it's a part of ignorance, too, They don't know exactly what they're doing either. Of course, they're paying for it, too. But then that doesn't help the beekeepers. Well, it helps. It does. That's the only thing that keeps them going is the money that almond growers.
I think in fairness to the almond growers and the corn growers and the soybean growers, is they're not being well advised. They're not getting the kind of advice they need to do it differently. And
right.
That's part of the problem. Nobody to lead them out of this mess.
No, it's very true, Tom. And unfortunately, it'll be interesting to see how things work out this coming year. Have you heard anything from any of the commercial beekeepers as far as the pollination has been going in California? Almond pollination, that is?
Are you asking me,
yes,
June?
Yes, I'm asking you.
Well, I think that what I've heard, and it's been a couple of weeks, and we're probably through most of the almonds by now, but what I heard 2 weeks ago was that it looked like it was going to be a successful pollination. Even though over the whole span of the colonies that are out there, they were very weak, probably half of what they should be and what the growers would want. They were having, at that time, almost ideal weather conditions. So the bees were getting maximum flying hours, and it looked like it was going to set a good crop. So one more time, we've dodged the bullet on this question.
Just out of curiosity, when you were looking at those statistics, did they show any differences over the years in honey production for the Corn Belt region?
Well, I wasn't looking at production, and production figures are not as accurate as we would like them to be, so it's hard to compare at a finer level one region to another. So I can't answer your question. I don't know what the production was, but I would imagine that it's reflected by what Ivan has seen, and it's been a dramatic reduction. I've seen the same thing here in Colorado.
Mr. Rickards, yeah. How's your honey production been over the years?
Well, it was pretty good until the neonicotinoids came on the market. Of course, you know, all that changed in the last few years. We've had nothing but corn and beans. Of course, the beans would have been all right, but the corn, that's a different story. But the beans, you know, according to this EPA report that they put out here last year, they said that there was no benefit at all to using neonicotinoids on the beans. But why do it then? The reason that the farmers do it is because the seeds, untreated and treated, cost the same. So the farmers think, well, if I got to pay for it anyway, I might as well put it on. So
there have been some studies questioning the efficacy on corn as well.
Yeah.
But these are marketing efforts. This is a marketing issue.
Yeah, well, it's dishonest is what it is.
There has been talk about Bayer's new and improved flu treatment that's supposed to reduce fugitive dust at corn planting time. Have you seen any improvement in conditions at corn planting time? What has been your experience with corn planting and fugitive dust?
To tell you the truth, I'd say probably you see a few dead bees at corn planting time. So I don't know. I'd say the thing is, you're going to get damage all throughout the whole growing season, so that isn't going to make that much difference. We have some loss at the corn planting, but you know, that's not perfect either.
Well, your letter to the editor raised the issue of water contamination, and that's been a great concern of many of us, because it means that because these things are water soluble, that it potentially is in the groundwater everywhere, and like any other life form, bees have to drink. So they're being given these chemicals throughout the season.
Right.
We're all seeing what we believe to be symptoms of this poisoning. I wonder if for the listeners, you could just explain some of the things that you're seeing through the course of the season, the supersedures and brood patterns and things like that.
Well, I think the thing about during the winter, you know, that's when you lose, that's when we get most of our loss. You're right about the supersedure probably, and it's not just the bees, you know. One of these articles I wrote, I talked about the loss of all our wild pheasants, and it's been dramatic. Where we used to have pheasants running around and cackling all the time, we don't have them anymore. And there's the loss from the frogs, and, you know, it's messed them up, too. So it's messed up the whole environment.
Out here in our part of the country, we have a lot of fly fishermen, and they're really they're as into their craft as the beekeepers are. And I had a fly fisherman stop the other day, and I asked him if they've seen any changes in the insect life, because they're very focused on the insects and the hatches and the populations. And he said, yes, definitely so. So right. There's another one.
Yes. And how can we not be drinking this stuff is what I can't understand. And, you know, we've had this big deal in Iowa about the Des Moines Water Works suing the three counties for contamination of the drinking water with the fertilizer. But they're not mentioning the neonicotinoids, the pesticides. It's ridiculous. How can they talk about one without talking about the other?
Well, the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey, did a two-year study in your area. They sampled 9 different Midwestern drainages, and they found the neonicotinoids in every sample that they took and at killing levels in some of those. So certainly it's getting into the drinking water. The question that I've raised many times over the past couple of years, this was presented to the public because it would target the insects. And the reason it would target the insects is because the insects had a high number of the synapses that this chemical is aimed at, that it interferes with. Mammals, people included, have relatively few. But the question that it raises in my mind, we're beginning to see that these effects are cumulative and irreversible. So the question is, if the latency for an insect, depending on the way it's administered, is a matter of hours or weeks or even months, and the insects have a lot of these synapses, but the effect is cumulative and irreversible, what's the latency for a human being?
Yeah,
how
right.
long will it be? One cigarette did not kill people. How long will it be before we begin to see the health effects of these massive poisonings of the environment? And all we'll get is an oops.
Right. What are these people thinking about that are selling this, that are making it? They're ignoring the bad results altogether. They must think, you know, they're going to heaven or something, regardless of how what they do. It's crazy.
Well, it's hard to imagine what they're thinking, Ivan, and that's one of the reasons why we do a program like this, is to try to bring this to the attention of the public so we can begin to make more sensible decisions.
Right.
I'm just curious, what is the beekeeping community's relationship with the farmers locally?
I don't think the farmers don't like us. They, you know, we're kind of ignored is most of it. You know, they're just looking out for their bottom dollar. There's some of them are very conscientious. They want to do everything right. Then there's some that are in the bind financially, so they have to go with the flow. And then there's some don't give a damn. They're out is for the bottom dollar and the hell with everybody else. So that's the way it is.
What about the non-farm public in Iowa? How do they feel about these issues, or are they even aware of them?
Oh, you know, people tell me I agree with you, but you know, it's kind of what can they do about it? What they really need to do is jump up and down and scream and holler, why are you poisoning us? But, you know, it's I don't know. It's, how do you get that done?
Well, we're beginning to see that in other parts of the country. Boulder, Colorado is looking at this very closely. Eugene, Oregon has passed ordinances restricting the use of the neonicotinoids on municipal land. I think there's one pending in Portland, and there have been several other cities, and I think that the momentum is mounting. I'm just wondering if Iowa people, they're at the heart of it, zero in these issues. I'm wondering how they feel.
I don't know. They care about it, but they, you know, life goes on and they're trying to make a living too. So,
yeah.
I don't know. The TV stations, they tell about these kids having brain tumors and they have autism and all that, but still, I suppose if you don't have effect.
I think unfortunately his call dropped, but I think he's making an excellent point, which is that there is a lot of, there are a lot of different problems that are going on, but, you know, once again, at what point is this going to be addressed? And I think that's the point that you were trying to make also, Tom.
Well, I think that we've begun to see just within the past few months a great deal of interest on the part of the public that wasn't there before, and one of the measures of that is the kind of reaction that we've seen from the chemical companies, because they're trotting out all of their sock puppets and putting in op-ed pieces and trying to counteract the information that's being presented to the people. It's very interesting to watch this happen. There's a tremendous amount of money at work here, and they have launched a public relations campaign to try to diminish the opposition to these chemicals.
Mr. Berger, they're making
billions from these chemicals. They can afford to put a few million dollars into propagandizing, and they're doing it.
Mr. Berger, have
you seen a lot of what Tom was describing, the op-ed pieces and whatnot, the advertising promoting the benefits of the chemicals, what have you? Have you seen a lot of that in Iowa?
Well, they put that on all the time. It's on the television stations. It's in the newspapers. They advertise this stuff. And, of course, they bought off Iowa State University. So, you know, they've used their money there, too. That's my feelings about it, anyway. That's not good.
Does Iowa State University support the beekeeping community in any way?
They've got one or two people working on bees there. It's not like it used to be, but to tell you the truth, I think the last one that was put in was paid for by the chemical people. That's to make them think that they're really looking out for us, but they're not. They don't give a damn about us. They're strictly themselves. And we have an Iowa State graduate, it's Jim Blome, who's the CEO of the crop, Bayer Crop Life, and he's telling us he's going to save the bees. Well, you know, they built this thing in the Carolinas about saving the bees, but that's a lot of hooey, too.
We've seen a lot about the monarch butterfly, and you're right in the middle of that flyway. Have you observed a decline in the monarchs?
Well, you know, it all goes along with the farming and the putting the Monsanto's a Roundup on, and it raises hell with that, the food for the monarchs. So I'm sure that you don't see many of them anymore.
Yeah, this is. Statistics that I've seen is that the population has declined by 90% in the last 20 years. And the interesting thing about that is I think you would see the same sort of decline in the bee world if you removed the beekeepers from the equation. We would see virtually no honeybees left.
Right.
Well, if it weren't for the beekeepers, I mean, people really have no idea what these folks are going through. Some of them are taking a second mortgage on their home. They're doing everything that they can to keep their operation going. And for many people, such as the two of you, actually, your business is toast.
Yeah, right.
And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see more and more beekeepers go, the beekeeping operations go under as these chemicals are used throughout agriculture and even in the home garden environment. It's unfortunate,
right.
But that's pretty much the way that things are heading.
Right.
I just want to say thank you so much for joining me and Tom today. It has been really great connecting with somebody from, as I said, from the Corn Belt. It's always nice to get perspective from someone who actually lives in the region, who's been in operation for many, many years, and is also well-respected in the beekeeping community. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, you're welcome.
Ivan, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope we have an opportunity to talk again.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Please listen each Thursday as Tom and I continue talking about the impact of neonicotinoids on the environment and on pollinators and other beings each week. Have a great afternoon, everyone.